The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board.
Woo!
Of the Midwest Swing Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network, which you can find on Twitter at Zone Coverage MN. I am your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon _ Warren. And producing today is Tom Schreier at T Schreier3. What's going on, man?
Not too much. We had a good staff pod.
People should definitely check that out. It is called the Cold Omaha Staff Podcast because we are not that creative as far as coming up with names. We felt like Cold Omaha was already creative enough. So, good spirited discussion, as you can hear the wheezing of Arif Hassan in the background, perhaps. Good spirited discussion on Jimmy Butler and the NBA draft, a little bit of Michael Floyd talk, a little bit of Twins sweeping Cleveland over the weekend talk, in Cleveland, no less. So, check that out at zonecoverage.com. Check the podcast section and look for the Cold Omaha Staff Pod. On the phone with us today is a repeat offender. You can find him on MLB Daily Dish. You can find him as part of the roster resource team. Getting ready to go to Miami of Ohio in the fall. It is John Becker. John, what's going on?
Oh, not much. Just enjoying the summer, enjoying some great baseball, and getting ready for the All-Star game.
Yeah, and we're going to break down our All-Star teams here in just a little bit. But before we get down to that, you know, what's been keeping you busy baseball-wise? Obviously, the roster stuff is going to be pretty consistent, especially now with the disabled list being as short as it is. There's always moves to take care of. I know that because I took care of the AL Central depth charts at Fangraphs for a little while. But I suppose that's keeping you busy in addition to writing every now and then.
Yeah, you know, there's just so much going on all the time in the league. I think having the 10-day disabled list instead of 15 really adds to that. And I think that, you know, every year teams are getting more cautious with injuries, and you can further manipulate that with the 10-day DL. So there's just so much player movement, and it's really just interesting to see guys shuttle back and forth all the time.
Well, in addition to that, too, we've seen the trade deadline coming around the bend here in a little over a month. And, first move that has taken place is a Florida swap between the Rays and the Marlins. Adany Echevarria going from Florida to Tampa Bay for a couple of prospects. What can you tell us about that trade?
You know, Echevarria is not a good hitter at all, but he's probably a top five defensive shortstop in Major League Baseball. And I think that the move shows that the Rays are truly trying to contend. And as good as Tim Beckham has been at the plate, he hasn't been quite as good as Echevarria would be in the field. So I think they're either, you know, trying to have someone breathe down Beckham's neck a little bit or have him slide over to second base, which is currently occupied by Daniel Robertson, who's, you know, an uninspiring option. Mm-hmm. So I think that this is kind of the first move for the Rays trying to contend in a, you know, kind of wild AL East so far.
What does it tell us about Matt Duffy as well?
I think it says that Duffy is just having a lot of setbacks. I believe it was a few days ago that Kevin Cash said that he had a calcium-rich deposit removed from his foot, which hopefully explains all of his setbacks and nagging injury there. But it could also say that even if he is going to be back shortly, that they don't want him playing shortstop after so much time off the field.
Do you know much about the prospects? I don't imagine that they're anything too terribly exciting.
I read Joel Sherman's just Twitter analysis of the trade, and he said that, you know, the pitcher that they acquired is, you know, a back-end guy at best, and the outfielder acquired is the fourth, fifth outfielder type at best. So it's really more of a salary dump for the Marlins, who also want to give JT Riddle a good long look at shortstop.
Well, and it sounded like, I think it was Jerry Krasnick was tweeting, that the Rays might want them, since they're taking on money, to throw in a high-powered arm. That didn't come to fruition, but I did see one of my favorite Rays bloggers saying that felt like such a Rays negotiation. Like, the idea that the Rays would think they're going to get Kyle Bearclaw out of that deal or anything was just kind of hilarious. You know, the Rays just trying to maximize value coming back.
Yeah, and, you know, that's what they have to do with their low budget, but, you know, you wonder if that kind of Rays style of negotiation comes to bite them. I mean, they've never in their entire history really made a big midseason impact trade, and you wonder if they're just kind of shooting too high with what they're looking for sometimes.
And Echevarria is a free agent at season's end, is that correct?
I believe he is, let me check real quick, I believe he's under control for one more season, if not more, let's check.
Okay.
He is... he's under control through 2018, and he's got $4.35 million this year. We'll probably get up to at least $5 million in arbitration next year. So, you know, again, it's more of a salary dump for the Marlins than anything. And the Rays, I think, can always flip him if they decide that Duffy can play short next season, we'll say.
Or in the worst case, non-tender him too, and just not pay.
Yeah.
You know, nothing wagered, nothing lost. But to get a guy who can play shortstop like that on their surface would probably be a pretty good bet for them. They're not going to get anything from him offensively, which I think is pretty obvious at this point, dating back to the Toronto days. You know, the highest OPS he's posted is .689. So I don't think anybody should expect too much in terms of pop or speed or anything. Just really good defender, and you know, he is who he is at this point, as he just turned 28 here a couple months ago.
Yep.
So, we're coming down, about 5 weeks from the trade deadline. I do have MLB Trade Rumors article up here. I do have one from CBS Sports as well. As far as some of the big trade chips that could be cashed in, some of them are a little more obvious. The teams that are floundering, you know, the Tigers, the San Francisco Giants have just been awful this year. The Oakland A's are kind of in perpetual sell mode. The White Sox are retooling, and so they might sell off some of their more interesting pieces. Who are some of the teams, first of all, that you're keeping an eye on as the market opens up? Because, you know, with the second wild card in the last few years, it does kind of give teams this illusion that they're in the market more than they are.
You know, I think beyond the obvious sellers, which would be the Giants, the Phillies, probably the Braves, for their short-term assets at least, and the Padres, I think that the team to keep an eye on is the Cardinals. They have been really slumping as of late. Dexter Fowler is currently on the DL, and they're just not getting the production that they need from Adam Wainwright to solidify, the back end of their rotation. So it's a matter of, you know, is John Mozeliak too stubborn to sell? Do they think they can contend? Because if they, you know, do end up trading people, they do have some good pieces they can trade, such as Sungjae Oh, Kevin Segrist, if someone is hoping for a bounce back, Trevor Rosenthal out of their bullpen, those three guys as a whole, even, you know, they could be willing to trade guys like Aledmys Diaz, Colton Wong, even Carson Kelly is blocked by Yadier Molina for another 3 years. So, I mean, they have some interesting pieces.
Do you think about moving Jed Jerko, or is he too good to move at this point and on a fairly reasonable contract?
I don't know if he's too good to move at this point. I think that if I were another team, I would be very concerned that it is the, you know, coaching that he's received with the Cardinals that has really made him blossom, and moving him away from that would make him not as good. And I also think that his fielding is of concern, but I think he's an option for him to trade. I think the only untouchables are really, you know, Carlos Martinez, Yadier Molina, and Stephen Piscotty because of the contract they just gave him.
Do you think they try to flip Tommy Pham, try to maximize his short-term value and get something out of that deal, or is he just doesn't have that much value because he's kind of a flash in the pan?
You know, he could be more than a flash in the pan. I mean, every time he's come to the majors, he's done a pretty nice job. He's OPS 812 in about a season's worth of at-bats so far in his career. I think the issue that a lot of people would have with trying to acquire him is that he's already 29 years old. You know, there's not much more that you're going to get. There's probably not another breakout coming. I think he's a very useful, you know, Brandon Guyer type lefty platoon bat, if not, you know, a fringe starter. But I don't think the value is really there to make it worth it for the Cardinals.
But to what end are they motivated by the fact that they still have Randall Grichuk, too, who has not been good, has in fact been sent down to the minors and brought back? I mean, how do they clear out a logjam in the outfield? Or is it just Grichuk is the odd man out again because of how much he's struggled with the strike zone?
Yeah, I think it's either Grichuk is the odd man out in the sense that he's just going to forever be that guy that is just frustrating at the major league level and get sent back down, or it's trying to maximize fans value, which, you know, isn't that great of a value, but it's still something if they believe in Grichuk and just want to hand him that left field starting spot.
The top four teams in that division are separated by 5 games, and it almost feels a little upside down. Milwaukee leading the Cubs for as not great as they've been, only 1 game out. How much does the logjam there affect what each of those teams does? Because even Pittsburgh now, without Starling Marte, 6 games under but 5 games out, you still have to kind of view yourself in the thick of it, even though they've had issues staying healthy, keeping guys on the field, and just playing well for even extended stretches.
Yeah, I think for the top four teams in that division, they do have to look more at, you know, how many games out of the playoffs are we, instead of, you know, what's our record. And I think for the Pirates, with Ivan Nova doing well, Jameson Taillon back, Andrew McCutchen on a really hot streak, and Starling Marte about to come back in a few weeks, you know, they could be on their way to moving up in the division. And I think the Cubs, you know, as stop and start as they've been all season, with being only a game and a half out right now, you know, they could very well buy. So it's going to be it's probably going to be the craziest division for the rest of the season. I think all the other divisions, you know, have one or two teams in it, and then, you know, the rest are on the fringes. But the NL Central, I mean, even the Reds have shown some bursts of playing well and being a tough team at times.
What do you think of how the Brewers are rebuilding their team? Like, Ben Lindbergh just had a story on how, instead of the Cubs and Astros who bottomed out, mm-hmm. they're kind of doing it on the run.
Well, I'll step in first, and then I'll let John pick up whatever he feels like as well. I kind of like that they have collected assets and still have some pieces in the big leagues that are interesting, whether it's Eric Thames, who, you know, defensively doesn't give you much, but he hit a few home runs. They still have Ryan Braun, who they don't really know what to do with, but they've also gotten, you know, good pop-up stuff from Corey Knebel, and Chase Anderson's been really good. Might make the All-Star team. You know, they've got some guys that have graduated that have been interesting. They've made some very, very smart trades, including Tyler Thornburg to the Red Sox for some pieces like Mauricio Dubon, who just got promoted to AAA. I think that it just shows that there's more than one way to skin a cat, and that you can't. Not everybody can do the same thing, because if 10 teams are all trying to bottom out at the same time, then you are you're not guaranteed to have a bad enough fallout that you get a number one overall pick, or you end up in the case of the Twins, where the number one overall pick is not a consensus organizational life changing generational talent.
Did hit a home run in his first at bat.
Yeah, was to do that. it just shows to me that there's more than one way to skin a cat. And second of all, I don't really care for tanking as a process anyway. So I kind of enjoy how they're going about it.
Yeah, what's interesting to me is that I feel like they kind of tried to bottom out and then were pleasantly surprised that they could get Domingo Santana back for Carlos Gomez and instantly have him start and get Travis Shaw for Tyler Thornburg. And I think they realized they found themselves getting a lot more starting pieces than they thought they would get. I mean, they got Jonathan VR for nothing, and despite, you know, he's currently injured now and he struggled when he has been healthy this season, he was kind of, you know, revolutionary. They got Hernan Perez for almost nothing, and I think that it's been a lot of just kind of pleasantly surprising moves for them, combined with the emergence of Corey Knebel and Jacob Barnes, despite his inconsistency, has been a really nice second option in the bullpen for them.
Do you think is more sustainable in the NL West, the Diamondbacks or the Rockies? Because obviously chasing the Dodgers is going to be a difficult proposition for anybody, especially with their assets and all that in their pockets. But which team do you buy into more at this point?
I think for this season, I have a preference for the Rockies because of what the pitchers like Kyle Freeland and Antonio Sensatello, despite struggling the last time, German Marquez, have been able to do thus far in place of John Gray and Chad Bettis. But that being said, I think that I don't know if this can have a multi-season really good effect. I think that, you know, there's a potential for these young arms wearing down or slumping. Mark Reynolds is not going to be this good for the rest of this season, let alone next year, I would think. Whereas the Diamondbacks, I think, have a really good established core in, you know, Goldschmidt and Pollock when he's healthy, and Jake Lamb has been good for two seasons now, and Brandon Drury's breaking out, David Peralta's been good. Zach Greinke, Robbie Ray, and I think that the Rockies kind of live and die with Nolan Arenado and Charlie Blackman a little bit.
Yeah, I think the Rockies have seven starters who I either really like or at least find interesting. Chatwood is, you know, he's not great, but he's an exit velocity darling. Senzatella's interesting with the ground balls. Freeland is obviously very talented, Marquez as well. I really like Tyler Anderson. I know that that's kind of, I'm on an island there, but strikeouts and grounders in that ballpark I think will always play. He's been very, very, he's been very hot and cold this year, and he struggled to stay healthy, but his May was really good, and I started to feel good about him as well. And then that's just the five that are not John Gray or Jeff Hoffman, who are probably arguably the two most talented guys in terms of raw talent. So I think they really do have an interesting rotation in the mix here.
Yeah, and it's incredibly interesting, and it's amazing how, I mean, when John Gray went down and it was his second or third start of the season, everyone said, okay, the Rockies are kind of screwed now. And, you know, just for guys like Hoffman and Freeland to just step up right away, it's been pretty amazing. And then, you know, not to mention Charlie Blackman has been a top five NL outfielder. Ian Desmond's been good enough since coming back. Mark Reynolds hitting home runs all over the place. Raimel Tapia is hitting well. I mean, it's amazing that they've just gotten production from everywhere. And that doesn't even mention the bullpen, where Greg Holland's been lights out. Jake McGee's been great. Adam Ottavino, until his last outing, had been very good. So, I mean, top to bottom, I think they're better than Diamondbacks, but long term, I'll still take the Snakes.
Well, let's do this all-star business. I believe it's Thursday that the voting stops, but when we were chatting off the air to prepare for the show, we wanted to unveil our all-star teams as they stand now. So which side do you want to do first?
Let's go American League first.
Okay, well, why don't we break it up like this? Why don't you tell me your starting lineup, and I will tell you how I differ, and then we can chat about each of those. I don't know how long it's going to take. We got about 15 minutes here, so
All right. So
we'll figure it out. But I'll let you go first for your starting lineup.
All right, so I went Gary Sanchez catching, Justin Smoke at first, Jose Altuve at second, his teammate Carlos Correa next to him at short, Miguel Sano at third, Nelson Cruz the DH, Aaron Judge, George Springer, and Mookie Betts in the outfield, Chris Sale on the mound, and then Craig Kimbrel is my closer.
All right, so I wanted to go Gary Sanchez behind the plate, but I also wanted to give some credence to playing time. I know that that diminishes the argument because Sanchez has more Fangraphs WAR and less playing time, which should give him the nod, obviously. But I do think that there is probably some argument that the guys that play more get the nod, too. I don't know if I necessarily went 100% with these are my guys as much as I went with these are my guys, but also what I think that might happen. So I went with Salvador Perez behind the plate, Logan Morrison at first base, Altuve and Correa up the middle. I did Jose Ramirez at third base. I went Springer, Trout, and Judge in the outfield, and I did Corey Dickerson at DH. Anybody that stands out to you that you wholly or vehemently disagree with? I have Chris Sale, and I have Kimbrel as well, so I can check those guys off so I don't repeat them.
No, I think that I think Perez is the safe pick, obviously.
Yeah, I went safe because I can't handle the takes.
Yeah, he was one of my three catchers along with Avila. I think that Morrison and Smoke have kind of had similar breakouts. When I had Yonder Alonso was my third first baseman because, yeah, you know, if you told anyone before the season that those would be the three AL All-Star first basemen, they probably would have thought you're crazy. Ramirez and Sano, I kept flopping back and forth, and it's just because I wanted to see Sano crush one in the All-Star game potentially, but No, I snuck Dickerson in there as one of my five outfielders. So, yeah, but you could obviously make him your DH as well.
So my backup catchers on the bench, I have Alex Avila and Gary Sanchez. We had to make sure, too, to make sure that all the teams were represented. I trust you did that. So I got Avila and Sanchez on the bench. I think you got to have three catchers, three innings each, or maybe four innings, three innings, and then have a guy that catches whatever they end up doing for the rest of the way. But so I think we're in agreement with our three catchers. Is that right?
Yep. Yep.
What did you have for corner infielders as far as backups?
I had Morrison, who is your starter, and Alonso is my backup first baseman, and I had Jose Ramirez as my one backup third baseman.
Okay. I have Sano as my backup third baseman. I have Yonder Alonso as well. And then let's see here. Everybody else is an outfielder or a middle infielder. So, okay, let's go middle infield. Who do you have as your middle infield backups?
Well, I had to get an Oriole and an Angel on there, so I went with Jonathan Scope and Andrelton Simmons.
I scratched out Simmons to put Scope on mine. So my middle infielders – or keep going, sorry.
Yeah, and the third guy was Xander Bogaerts, who was the easy pick for me.
Oh, shoot. I had Bogaerts starting at short, and then I didn't put him back on my bench. So that's an oversight by me. When I post this on Zone Coverage, I might have to change that up. I do have Scope, I have Lindor, and then I have Jed Lowry, who I think is having a really nice year.
So yeah, he was one of my last cuts.
I might have to bump one of those guys for Bogaerts, though, because I think he's having a better year than they are. Okay, so hit me with your outfielders. Who do you have as far as backup outfielders? Because I've got one, two, three, four. I've got five backup outfielders, so maybe I'll cut one of those guys and put Xander Bogaerts on there.
Yeah, so I snuck Dickerson on as an outfielder. Okay. I have Ben Gamel, who, you know, leading the AL in batting average. I feel like you've got to take him. And then Nelson Cruz is my DH/outfielder, along with Edwin Encarnacion as my backup DH first baseman.
Okay, well, I went with Lorenzo Cain, Justin Upton, Avisail Garcia, Mookie Betts, and Brett Gardner. I don't know. What's your rooting interest for baseball? Is it Yankees? I can't remember.
It's Cubs, but since they won the World Series, I'm trying to be a little more neutral.
Okay.
I had Aaron Hicks until he got hurt.
And I have Aaron Hicks on my list and crossed
I moved him over to the injured section.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that really any of the Yankees outfielders, besides Ellsbury, who was just hurt for too long, would have been good picks. I almost put Garcia. So, you know, it's tough to make those last cuts.
Well, who should I – should I drop Brett Gardner for Bogaerts then, or should I get rid of Jed Lowry? I don't think I can get rid of – well, wait, can I get rid of Lowry? I don't know if I have another A. Oh, I have –
You got Alonzo. I would get rid of Lowry personally.
Okay. Well, we'll cut Lowry and keep Bogaerts because Bogaerts can play all over as a shortstop then. I do think Lowry's on his way out of Oakland anyway. We can talk about that as well. But any real gripes you have, or is it just kind of Justin Upton, I didn't hear you mention, but he's having a fairly good year for the Tigers.
Yeah, he is. I was close to putting him on. There's just so many good outfielders on it. That's always the toughest position for me.
Otherwise, though, no real gripes?
Nope.
Okay, so let's go to starting pitchers. I have five starters in the player vote because I think it's five starters, three relievers. And then I also have one, two, three. So I have eight starters total. I'll do my first five, though. I already mentioned Sale. I have Michael Fulmer, Marcus Stroman, Carlos Carrasco, and Chris Archer. Any gripes or what do you have for your first five starters?
So Carrasco, Stroman, and Archer I probably would have put last week, but all their past, each of their most recent starts have not been good.
Ah.
So I was able to sneak on Corey Kluber, who just won AL Player of the Week. Yeah. I also had Fulmer. I took Lance McCullers. I took Jason Vargas, and I took Yu Darvish.
Okay, so on my starters that I don't have on the top five, I have Darvish, McCullers, and Severino. Oh, I do have four stars. I can't do math. I'm sorry. I have Darvish, I have McCullers, I have Severino, and I have Jason Vargas. So that leaves me with four relievers, including that includes Kimbrel, who I already mentioned.
Yep, I want six relievers just because, you know, All-Star game, I feel like people are more comfortable, you know, the relievers are going to be more comfortable.
And maybe I should have done that.
So after Kimbrel, I went Betances and Miller is my two easy picks. And then the last three was kind of tough. I ended up with Tommy Canley, Roberto Ozuna, and Blake Parker.
Mm-hmm. Those are all good picks. I went with Devensky, Miller, and Canley. If I were to rework it, I probably would do more relievers. But it got to a point where I didn't feel like enough of the guys separated themselves. Betances is in the mix, I suppose. I probably should have put him on there. But I like Devensky for the multi-inning stuff, too, which gives him a boost for me. But I have no real gripes with your list, and I suspect vice versa for American League.
Yep, correct. I was really close with Devensky, and you know, with so many of these picks, I just wish I could squeeze a few more guys on my roster.
And I think we accounted for every team.
Yep.
All right, so let's go to the National League side. feel free. You can hit us with your starting lineup, and I suspect the starting lineups on the National League side are going to be closer, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yep. So I went Posey, Goldschmidt, Murphy, and Seager, assuming Seager's healthy up the middle.
Yep.
Bryant at third, Harper, Blackman, Stanton in the outfield, and then Scherzer on the mound. Jansen is my closer.
Wait, so you didn't do a DH for them?
Oh Lord, I would go. I'd put Ozuna in the outfield and have Stanton DH.
Okay. Well, I went with Posey, Votto, Murphy, Arenado, Seager, Ozuna, Blackman, Harper, and then Paul Goldschmidt is my DH. So
yep.
I don't think we have any real big gripes. I waffled third base between Arenado, Bryant, and even Justin Turner's having a really nice season. I think he's got like a 4-something on base percentage, which is absurd no matter what time of year it is. So I think we're pretty good there as far as starting position players. Who did you say your starter was again?
I went Max Scherzer.
Okay, yeah, I went Max Scherzer as well, and I got Kenley as my closer as well. Kind of bummed that he walked somebody. I thought that was going to go on forever. Who was the batter that he walked? I didn't even see. Did you see who it was?
It was Arenado on a 3-2 in a 12-6 game. So kind of annoying, but
didn't Kenley end up batting in that game or something?
Yeah,
too?
he had a 392 foot RBI double.
What
in
is
the top of the ninth?
That's a nice luxury of having a guy who used to catch. That he's not going to totally embarrass. I mean, he couldn't hit when he was a catcher, but he won't totally go up there and embarrass himself, which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Let's see. Hit me with your bench. Let's see. I got a 12-man position player bench. I have no idea if I structured this right, so I'll probably take a lot of heat when I post this, but let me know what you got.
Yeah, I went Flowers.
Or wait, sorry. Catchers. Let's do catchers. That way we can make it more digestible.
Yep. Flowers and Realmuto backing up behind the plate.
So I have Grandal, and let me see here. I had to have taken a second catcher. I just got to find it. Grandal. Oh, geez, I only took two catchers. That's probably not a good look. I might have to swap somebody out here, but I've got Posey and Grandal, and I don't think you want each of those guys catching 4-plus innings. So we'll have to flip it and see there. But all right, what do you got as far as first base, third base?
I had to squeeze on. I have five combined bench guys on the corners just because those positions have been so good.
Right.
So I have Arenado and Turner over at third.
Yep, I got Turner and Bryant, so I'm right there with you on those.
Yep, and I have Votto, Zimmerman, and Bellinger, with Rizzo being really my last cut on the entire team.
I've got Zimmerman and Bellinger as well. I do not have Rizzo, and it kills me for doing that too.
Yeah,
I do have Freddie Freeman too, and I know that he's battled injuries, but he's just been so good that I have him in there. I'm just trying to think of if I have any other corner guys. I have Jake Lamb.
Yeah, he was probably my last cut at third. You know, if I didn't have to sneak a Philly on there or a Padre on there elsewhere on my team, I would have had Lamb and Rizzo on there.
All right, so what are you doing up the middle?
Up the middle, I've got Josh Harrison, who's been a pleasant surprise, and Zach Cozart, who's been even more of a surprise.
I have Harrison because he can play everywhere, which will be nice for later in the game. I have Cozart, who's having a nice, I believe, walk year as well, which is good. Then I have Rendon and Jerko. I don't know where you'd want those guys to play, but I think they both fit. Who have I missed for you?
I only took two second basemen, two shortstops, so you haven't missed anybody for me.
And then I only have one more position player, and it's an outfielder, so I did not really load up on outfielders. I got Michael Conforto on my team.
I would have put him on, and then I realized I needed a Philly, so I had to put Aaron Altair, and I also, under in Ciarte, I wanted some really good defense up the middle when needed.
So, who are your starters outside of Scherzer then?
I've got Kershaw,
yep,
Robbie Ray, Zach Greinke, Alex Wood, and Trace Anderson.
I've got Kershaw, Greinke, Carlos Martinez, Robbie Ray, Steven Strasburg, Jimmy Nelson, Jacob DeGrom. Because I did starter heavy, and I probably shouldn't have done that.
So
I only have four relievers.
Yeah, Martinez was the guy I almost put over Anderson, but I was like that one random guy that most people haven't heard of, so I went with Anderson.
So I kept four relievers outside of Kenley. Who were your relievers? Because you had more, so go ahead.
Yeah, I went five outside of Kenley. So I went with Knable, Greg Holland, Felipe Rivero, Wade Davis, and then Brad Hand, because I had to have a Padre, but I definitely, you know, snubbed a more deserving player.
So I had Brad Hand, who Minnesota boy. Yeah, Tom's excited about that. Felipe Rivero, because I was worried about getting a Pirate on the list until I ended up getting Harrison.
Yep.
Corey Knable, and then my Philly, Pat Neshek, another Minnesota guy. So I'm loading up on Minnesota guys as far as bullpen. The standouts in bullpens, the bullpens are strong because strikeouts are up. So it was kind of hard to find the guys who were the next cut above, I thought. What was kind of the most difficult thing for you?
You know, hardest for me was, you know, AL, even the bad teams had, you know, some obvious all-stars. But, I mean, the Phillies, Aaron Altair's cooled off recently. And, you know, Brad Hand, he's been very good, but, you know, he doesn't scream all-star to you.
Right.
And, you know, Will Myers is probably, like, the eighth best first baseman at all right now. So, you know, I think that was tough. I think, you know, if we didn't have to have someone from every team, I would have gotten Conforto on there, and I would have gotten maybe Raisel Iglesias in my bullpen.
Well, before we let you go, what is your biggest gripe with the All-Star Game, or what would you like to see different? Because I do think it could be, obviously, some people want not every team represented, but I do think it's good for the Phillies, you know, their fans to have a reason to watch. I'm not sure if I would change anything specifically, but if there was anything you could change or something you'd want to see different, what would you hone in on?
You know, I love the game itself. I think it's fun. I like that the players have fun and, you know, they joke around. I think because of that, you know, it just shouldn't determine home field advantage in the World Series. You know, nobody's thinking about that while they're playing the game. I mean, I remember Adam Wainwright grooved a fastball to Derek Jeter in his final All-Star game. So, I mean, if you're going to play like that, and that's totally fine because it's super fun to watch, you know, you just don't have it determine the playoffs.
Yeah.
No one's thinking about that while they're playing the game. It's only going to affect a few guys on each team.
Right. Well, thanks for joining us. Thanks for taking a little bit of time out of your Tuesday. It was a lot of fun. We'll have you on again real soon.
All right. Have a great day, everybody, and thanks for listening.
You bet. John Becker for Roster Resource and MLB Daily Dish. You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. We'll be right back.